You know, we had the eclipse here, and I hope nobody didn't get any holes in their eyeballs trying to see, but it was really a neat thing. Drew had some friends to come down from North Carolina, and he brought a big old telescope down, and it was wonderful that we were able to see through it. They didn't get all the pictures took that they wanted to get, but they got enough for remembrance. So that was a wonderful thing. And I also thought about, you know, how great it is to be able to see the things that the Lord has put up there and how they work, and how He has them to work out according to His will. And it just struck me kind of strange whenever it got full dark up in Drew's yard, and then when the light started moving away from it, well, then it looked like a diamond ring.
Yeah.
And Drew got the picture of it on his camera.
Really good one, too.
And it was really good. It was a real good one. And it made me think and realize why that Jehovah didn't go ahead and just do away with man and start over again. But I realized that we were His, and the ring kind of made it official in that sense, that when I saw the ring, I thought, yeah, we're His. We're still His, regardless whether we're Jew or Gentile, we're still His.
Amen.
And I'm glad that that thought came and hung with me in that way, because it just, you know, it was so significant. It was like almost that there was one, that like almost like the hand of God was just handing it to you that way.
Good analogy.
And so we'll go ahead and get started on that little spiel, but it was wonderful. And I don't really expect to see that anymore in my lifetime, but be that as it is, I saw it then. Okay, we're going to go back to Zechariah 11 and finish up Zechariah 11, and this is study 144 in our study and walk. And you know, we're still dealing with a kind of a back and forth situation here in Zechariah 11, but we like four or five verses getting done with it. But when we get into chapter 12, we're getting toward the end of the chapter of Zechariah, and it deals with man's day. And so we're probably going to have enough time to do a little bit in the 12th chapter also, which deals with man's day and when God is dealing with those that dealt harshly with His children, even though that is who He used to send a lot of them away, and a lot of them went on their own. And these verses here also telling in Zechariah 11, and because it's getting right down toward the end of the book, and it's corresponding with the end times and Revelations. And you know, Ronnie and I were talking Sunday about the word how, and we went through Zechariah 11, and it talks some in there about the howling that took place when the fire came and destroyed the cedars of Lebanon, and even got into the virgin oaks and Bashan, and the people were howling and hollering and going on because this was a lot of their livelihood. But fire is something, you know, that man a lot of times can't contain, and you have to put out the howl or the yell that is here to watch yourself and to watch out and get away from it. But we left off in 13, and I'll go back and look at we were talking about a shepherd and about Zechariah being the shepherd that fed the flock as they were being taken away or sent out of the area of around Jerusalem and around the temple, and the things that they had to go through, and the things that they had been through because of their idolatry. And when you get down to verse 10, it says, "And I took my staff, even beauty, and cut it asunder." You know, a herdsman usually had two things that he had with him. One was a staff to where he could separate the flock and to catch some of the legs of the flock if they needed to be caught and put together or whatever, because sometimes they would rope some together, especially the goats that the people raised in those days. They would, a goat don't, they don't have the sense that a sheep had, but it had to be they had to be looked after too. But lots of times they put bells on them, on the male goats, and send them out, but they tie short ropes on them where they couldn't wander off from each other, and you know they had to kind of kept the bunch in a group. And so this county was a representation of God's people, that they had these binds that tied them together, but yet some of them would still wander off on their own and get involved in all this idolatry stuff that they were dealing with. But the two staffs, one was beauty. We talked about that, and the other one was I can't even remember now. Let me go back. Oh, the staves. You said I had two staves, one called beauty and the other I called bands. So the band was kind of like a club to club animals with, or something, to when they was watching over the flock. And so he cut the staff in two, in 10. He said, "And I took my staff, even beauty, and cut it asunder, that I might break my covenant which I had made with all the people." And you see, when he cut that staff in two, it was symbolic of breaking the covenant with those that he had made covenants with, because they didn't keep the covenant anyway. "And it was broken in that day, and so the poor of the flock that waited upon me knew that it was the word of the Lord," or it was done by God, and it was done through his word that it was severed or came apart. "And it said, and I said unto them," verse 12, "if you think good, give me my price, and if not, forbear. So they weighed for my price 30 pieces of silver," and we went over that. This was Zechariah talking to the sheep traffickers, to the people that were there, that the Lord was allowing them to do to his people whatever they wanted to do. And they came in and sold some of them, slaves, killed some of them. There was lots of things that happened there that we didn't read about in Jeremiah and Ezekiel and the other places, because this is a an addition, if you will, to God's Word. This is like the four Gospels. You can't look at one Gospel and get all of the life of Christ out of one Gospel. It just can't be done. You got to look at all of them together. And so we start in 13. Here's our study. Okay, and the Lord said unto me, we just talked about the 30 pieces of silver. He says, give me my price. And so here was the price. And the Lord said unto me, cast it into the potter a goodly price, that I was praised of them, and I took the 30 pieces of silver and cast them to the potter in the house of the Lord. Well, it was, instead of a potter, you can call him a fashioner, because, you know, a potter is one that usually works with clay. And a potter wouldn't need the silver money, because he really couldn't do anything much with it. But in the treasury, it could be used, certainly, that way. So when you break it down, it said, and the Lord Jehovah said unto me, Zechariah 13, cast it into the potter. Cast it into the treasury. The treasury of course, of the temple. And so the potter there could be the treasurer or the fashioner, if you will, to make out of it whatever, to send it to someone that could make something out of it that would be worthwhile. And he said a goodly price, an ample amount that I was appraised at of them. So they made an appraisal of Zechariah and his life. And so evidently, the sheep traffickers thought that Zechariah was worth 30 pieces of silver, which is the worth of a good slave. It was basically, this is basically where this come from, you know, 30 pieces of silver.
That's what the whole symbol is all about.
Yeah, right. And it said, and I, Zechariah, took the 30 pieces of silver, my worth. He said, this was what they appraised me at. This was my worth. It was like, you know, if you're going to buy a piece of land out here, well, you get somebody to tell you what it's worth. Well, that's what Zechariah done. And he says, I took the 30 pieces of silver and cast them to the potter, or to the fashioner, in the house of the Lord, into the treasury of Jehovah's house, the house of the Lord. And then the scene changes again right quick. And then in verse 14, it goes back to Jehovah speaking again. He said, then I, Jehovah, cut asunder mine other staff, even the bands. Okay. So he had already separated the staff, but now he's cut his club in two. And a short club ain't worth much in a fight with a wild animal. To take care of them. So that's symbolic of him not taking care of his people anymore. Because the club was like something that he could beat the enemy away with. He has more power than that, but it's a symbolical picture of that if you take away the power of God out of the equation, it's something that man would have to do if he was tending the sheep. And we'll get into that a little bit deeper, a little further down the road here. So, in 14 he says this, and I cut asunder mine other staff, even bands, that I might break the brotherhood between Judah in Israel. So not only was he going to go and to break the covenant with all the people, but now he's going to make a separation like he separated his club. He's going to make a separation between Judah and that group against the other 10 tribes. So you see how that works too. And he says, and I cut asunder. Asunder is 996, and that's the word bane, and it's cut for space between the two parts. Mine other staff, or the club, or the bat. Even bands, and bands there is the symbol of togetherness. You know, if you're thinking about, a lot of times about a barrel, they make the staves of barrels out of wood. You could call them bats separate if you would, but when they're put together, they make a barrel. And these bands holds the barrel together. And so the word, actually, the word bands means togetherness or union. And it makes many pieces into one. But here he is separating the band to where it can't hold together. So that's the reason one group could go one place and another group could go another place. And all this, he said, that I might break or put a space, that I might break the brotherhood, that I might put a space in their union that they, whatever they've got. And then they were all in adultery, dealing with idolatry. And he certainly didn't like that, because some of them had got their idolatry in Egypt. Some of them had got their idolatry in Assyria. And some of them had got their idolatry from other places in the world. The other people then of the known world. And so they had brought all this idolatry together to kind of form it into one big clump. God said, no, it's not going to work. I'm not going to have that. So he says, he put a space in their union, in their togetherness, in their bands between Judah, the two tribes there, and the 10 tribes of Israel that were in Syria. Basically, they're gone to Syria. Then we get to verse 15, and it said, and the Lord said unto me, take unto ye yet the instruments of a foolish shepherd. So the Lord speaking, still speaking, but he was talking to Zechariah. So this was, it said, and the Lord Jehovah said unto me, Zechariah. And this is another command that he's given Zechariah. He told Zechariah to feed these people. I'm not going to feed them, but you can feed them, because they're going to die anyway. The dying's going to die. Okay? He says, take unto thee yet the instruments, the implements or the tools of a foolish shepherd, or a, if you will, a worthless shepherd, which is a little different, you know. A shepherd can have foolish thoughts, but there's some that are just ain't worth sending out, you know. So we're going to read the note in the CB there in 15. And it says, instruments are implements. They're implements or tools of the trade of a shepherd. And the foolish there is worthless, as we just mentioned. Judah and Israel had rejected these. And later on, they rejected Messiah, the good shepherd. Hence the threatenings that we find in verse 16 and verse 17. So you see, this is working right up to the fact that when Messiah comes, he's going to see all this foolishness that these people are still hanging on to. And it's like sending a shepherd out without a club or without a staff. He just don't have the tools to do his job with. So 16 and 17 are the threats that comes up. This was because of the rejection that these people rejected Jehovah. And when Christ comes, they're going to reject Christ the same way. Because in chapter 9, in verse 9, he was promised he's going to send the Messiah. Well, these people are not worthy of accepting that, so they're still, he had to send them off because they rejected him all these years. Now when he brings them back, they're gonna reject the promised one. Let's read 16 and 17. It says, "For lo, I will raise up a shepherd in the land, which shall not visit those that be cut off, neither shall seek the young ones, nor heal that is broken, nor feed that standeth still. But he shall eat the flesh of the fat, and tear their claws into pieces." And of course, this is going to deal with the Antichrist, and one of the titles of the Antichrist was the idle shepherd, one that he didn't care for his flock. He wasn't there to take care of anybody but himself and the devil's deal. That's all he was there for. So let's look at this. It says, "For lo, see and know this." Really look and understand this. "For I will raise up a shepherd in the land. I will bring forth a shepherd in your given land that I had give to you. In the land which shall not visit or go unto those that be cut off, or go to the perishing." Christ come for those that weren't, he was looking for those that would not want to perish, that would have or receive this life-giving great gift that he come to make known to them. Okay. And he says, "Neither shall seek the young one," talking about those that came back into the land when God would let them come back into the land. But they came back with no purpose. A lot of them came back with no purpose. They came back because while they were gone, their folks had not really changed enough. While they were gone off in captivity, they had really not changed enough for them to see and to understand the goodness and the graciousness of the plan and purpose that God had for them. And so, you know how youths are, or the young are, they just stray around. You know, they really don't know. They need direction. They don't know which way to go in that situation. "Those that be cut off, neither shall seek the young ones, the straying with no purpose, nor heal that which is broken." So he didn't come to heal the wounded. But what he came to do was to take care of the ones that didn't get wounded, was born with infirmities. Because he came to give the blind sight, to make the lame to walk again. The things, the abnormal situations that comes upon man, because, I don't know if it was because of sin or because of something else, it really didn't matter, but he wasn't going to go out on the battlefield and heal the wounded. That was not the thing. It was the things that came upon them that they had no control over, or the things they were born with. It says, neither shall seek the young ones, the straying, or heal that which is broken, the wounded, nor feed that standeth still, or to nourish that. And you see the two that's there. Nor heal that is broken, nor feed that standeth still. And the ones that are weaker, the ones that are standing still would be considered weak or lazy. Because everyone that came back into their land, God had something for them to do. And they came back with a job to do. And a lot of them didn't do that.
I think Zechariah here is, he's talking about the Lord, but he's talking about the Lord coming as a judge.
Right.
And the executor of the treading out of the winepress of the fierceness and the wrath of an almighty God.
Okay. He said, but he shall eat the flesh of the fat. The word there is 13:20. The flesh is, that's called Baal Savor. And the fat there is the clear, plump, savory meat, you know, that was to be given for an offering, for a sweet smelling savor to God. And that's, you know, when he comes, although he came as a servant, but yet, if he come as the Messiah, then he had every right to partake of that. And it says, and tear their claws into pieces, to break off or rip. And their claws there is, when you look it up, it's 6541 in the Strong. And it says, tear their claws into pieces. He's talking here about the split hoofs. You know, the animals that have the split hoofs. They'll tear those into pieces. Because they weren't to be used as a sacrifice in that situation. But evidently, the Antichrist, or the false one, would accept that. Now, let me turn the... I skipped the pages. I went back and done 17 on another sheet. And he says in 17, woe unto the idle shepherd that leaveth the flock. The sword shall be upon his arm and upon his right eye. His arm shall be clean dried up, and his right eye shall be utterly darkened. And so this is kind of a picture of the way the Antichrist is going to come. And you remember when Gorbachev became president of Russia, the head man of Russia, and he had a patch over his eye, and people said, oh, this has got to be the Antichrist. I remember him saying that. I don't know where y'all did or not, but now I don't think his arm was withered up. But he did have the patch over his eye, you know. And he,
well, most people, when it comes to fulfilling prophecy, they'll take it partial.
Yeah, they'll take
it partial. Well, he meets one out of five criteria, so he's the guy.
Yeah. Okay, it says, woe unto the idle shepherd. And this is one of the titles of the Antichrist, is the idle shepherd, that leaveth the flock. An idle shepherd don't care. He'll just walk away and let them do what they want to do. So this was how these people were dealing with the Israelites that were left there, not the ones that were carried away, but the ones that were left in Jerusalem. They were going to die by the fire that's going to come down anyway. And it said, the sword shall be upon his arm and upon his right eye. And the sword there is a sharp instrument or cutting tool, and it could be a dagger or a short knife of some sort carried in a sheath next to his right arm, but also it could have been a tattoo. You ever thought about it? See, his arm was withered. He couldn't use a sword with that arm anyway. Why would he carry a sword? But if he had a picture of it on there, it might really impress somebody. I'm going to leave that up to you. You know, you guys...
I never thought about it.
You guys could form... You guys could form your own opinion of it. But, and it said... And upon his right eye, it said, the sword shall be upon his arm and upon his right eye. In 17, his arm shall be clear dried up. So there was something on his arm and something over his eye. So, you know, somebody that don't have a good eye usually had a patch over. Even way back years and years ago. If it wasn't something that could focus, it would be against you rather than it would be for you. And if it was covered up where you couldn't see anything, it would lay into your other eye some greater use. So, yeah, I just got to think, well, it could be a tattoo on the arm and a patch on the eye.
I never thought about that.
Okay. No, don't take my word for it, but just give it some thought. Because we're talking here about figurative things a lot of times rather than literal things. And it says, and his arm shall be clean dried up. And if you look at that, it means to be withered up as of no use. And it said, and his right eye shall be utterly darkened. It's 35:43, and that's Kohal. And it means to be dim or dark, unable to distinguish figures. It was no good for viewing, and it was deemed useless. And it would interfere with the other eye. And so the reason a patch would be there was to completely blot it out to where the other eye could be better. That was the reason for the patch all the time. So there you go. So in 17, and it says, for a sequel to this prophecy, see chapter 13, verses 7 through 9. So, if we go through it, there's no point in doing it right now, but we need to store that in our memory bank, and so we'll turn
to the CB will cross reference it back.
It'll come back to us. And so we're going to go to 12. I got about 10 minutes left, and we'll go to Zechariah. We'll just keep on going to Zechariah 12. And this deals with man's day. Verses 1 through 9 deals with man's day. It is a literal prophecy. And 1 through 4 is threats to Israel's enemies. I get it out in a minute. Enemies. And this are nations that are to be cut off. This is moving on up now up into Revelation, for this, the part of this. And so we're gonna, I don't know that we'll get through all four of these verses, but we'll start. It said, the burden of the word of the Lord for Israel, saith the Lord, which stretches forth the heavens and layeth the foundation of the earth and formeth the spirit of man within him. The burden here is the oracle that's going to be given of the word of the Lord Jehovah. It is Jehovah Sabaoth. And it is for Israel. And it says it is for Israel or upon Israel, if you will, concerning Israel's afflictions and final deliverance. You know, God doesn't forget the things that Israel went through, although they were not in the will of the Lord. They were not where he wanted them to be. But this is, they put their worst foot forward to the children of God, and God's going to pay them back. And so this is the reason here for the oracle. Saith the Lord. That's Jehovah's oracle. This is the one that rules heaven and earth. It's the one that showed me the diamond ring. It says, the one which stretches forth the heavens. And you know, we've heard this more than one time. And stretcheth there is 5186. In the Strong's, and that's Naltal in the Hebrew. And it's to spread forth or to spread out. And it can also mean a cause to yield. Because when the power of God is put on something, something has got to yield to that power. And I kind of think about, when I read this, I kind of think about people in the food industry that has to wear a net over their hair to keep it in place. So they have to pull that net, they have to get a net that's expandable that will cover their hair and not let any of it out. And this is kind of the way that God has given us a picture there, that when he stretched forth the heavens, it was kind of like, well, here's the earth and here's the heavens, and I'm going to stretch them out, and it's going to take care of the earth. The earth can't do anything. It's like the hair. The hair can't get away from the net.
Yeah.
And man can't get away from this part of the heavens. He can't go. He's limited to where he can be. In that sense. But now God's not limited. So this is another story in itself here. Which stretches the heavens and layeth the foundations of the earth. Okay. The layeth there means to form, to give, or commit. And the foundation there is always a beginning. Now, there's other words for foundation. But in a general sense, it means a beginning. Because you can't, and you see, God didn't make man buildings. He gave him skins to cover his rear end. And he gave him food that's growing wild in the woods, but he didn't give him no buildings. Man has to put his own foundation. God put the foundation of the earth in place, but man is to put his own foundation down for his dwelling. Now the whole earth can be God's dwelling, but man, you know, he has to lay his own beginning. And it says that when he chooses a wife, that they form the union, cleave together, and they go out and they begin again. They start over. It's a new start. Okay? Of the earth. In the earth there's Eretz. And it means to be firm. Firm land. Now, sometimes the land turns against man and it opens up holes and sometimes it sucks him in. But that's just the way land is. And God made it. He broke it apart. He can put it back together. Whatever he needs to do, certainly. Absolutely. So, he says, and he formed the spirit of man. Well, the form there is like laying the foundation. It means, and formeth the spirit, the ruach of Adam, man, within him. So this tells us a little more about man. And so we're furnished, we're formed or given, or we have been committed this ruach, the spirit. And you know, we saw the spirit, the breath, leave my man 3 months ago. And that last breath, when it went back to God that gave it. And we saw that. Same thing happens with all men, with Adam. The spirit, God requires it back. That's a gift. He gives it to us, but it's kind of like a loaner. He's going to get it back. And it says from within him, the spirit of man that's within him. So God, when God started forming, his beginning was from the inside and working outward. And if you think about it, the things that God points to us to tell us is the inner man, not the outer man, but the inner man. And he still works from the inside out, from the end, inside toward the outside. So as beautiful as we can be, it's still not the beauty that God sees. Because he starts from within and works out. And we look at the outside and try to work in. Okay, that's another thought. You might disagree with that. But two, it says, behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling, and to all the people round about, when they shall be in the siege, both against Judah and against Jerusalem. So in verse 2 it says again, behold, or lo, if you will, to see and understand, I will make my city, Jerusalem, a cup of trembling, and trembling there is 74-78. And that's Ra'al. Ra'al. And it is a terrible shaking or a reeling as one that is intoxicated. You know, if the cup that he's talking about is shaking in man's hand. Every time I see a hand and somebody is shaking, that shakes uncontrollably with Lou Gehrig's disease or something, I think about Muhammad Ali when he stands up and he stood up before the world and he says, I'm the greatest that's ever been. And when he got older, it was a shaking hand. He couldn't hold his hand still. You can't do that. Now, you might get away with it for a while, and he did get away with it for a while, and he made millions of dollars. But he died not intoxicated with Parkinson's disease or whatever it was, but he was shaking so bad he wasn't the greatest anymore. And sometimes
a little bit of the king in Acts.
Yeah.
That they said, oh, this ain't no man, it's a God. And then all of a sudden the worms came down.
Came down and ate him up.
Ate him in front of their eyes.
Absolutely. So you don't do this. But the word trembling there is a reeling or a terrible shake. And he says, unto all the people, it was affecting everyone that were around in the Jerusalem area or around in that area. It says roundabout or in the area where they shall be in the siege. And that siege there is 4692. And it means to be hemmed in. So the nations that are there dealing with God's people and had dealt unjustly with them, they're going to be hemmed in and cut off. And you know, I think this is kind of like the Gog and Magog. They all come to do war against God, and they got hemmed in.
Doesn't go so good.
No.
At least it's not going to go so good.
Right. And so when the siege come, it wasn't a good deal. And it says, and we'll do three and we'll quit. It says, and in that day, in man's day, I will make Jerusalem a burden, a burdensome stone. And burdensome there is 46:14. And I kind of disagreed with the notes in the Companion Bible on this one. I will make Jerusalem a burdensome stone. Do you remember the story of David and Goliath? David went down to the brook and he picked up these stones. And he come up and Goliath laughed at him. What are you going to, send a shepherd boy out here to do me in? Then David won them little stones. He said, I will make Jerusalem a burdensome stone in man's day. And this is something that's hard to comprehend or to take in. Goliath, he couldn't understand it. He couldn't comprehend how this young shepherd boy with a little stone was going to come and get him. But he got him. And so, again, I think this is a figure of speech. If God's with you and there's a stone involved, you better watch out, because it may not be the size of the stone. It may not be the heft of the stone that gets you. It may be the power behind that stone that takes you down. Okay. It says, for all the people, those who do not understand, God says, my power as to use the things that they call foolish. And that was all the way through the Old Testament. The foolish things of God is smarter than the devices of man. You better watch out, because God can use the most different of things to get his will done. And I thought that was, that's a freebie. You may not agree with that, but I thought it was. And it said, and the burden, and that all that burden themselves with it shall be cut into pieces. And there's a note in the CB in 3 there where it says cut into pieces. It'll be lacerated. I want you to look at the list here. Now, this part of it I agree with. The ones that were going to be cut into pieces were Assyria and Persia, Rome, Greece, Egypt of old, and in the latter days, you know, you got Spain, Portugal, and it says, and Russia have been so lacerated on account of their treatment of the Jewish people. Now that, again, is another little iffy thing.
I would agree with the first part of it. I'm not so sure about the latter.
Okay, that particular
one,
verse.
Yeah,
okay. So, it says, all that burden themselves with it shall be cut into pieces. Though all the people of the earth be gathered together against it. And so, again, here's the situation. They will in the end. And John saw it in Revelations. They gathered together to make war against those that were God's people, to stand up for God. And of course, Hitler did the same thing later on, you know. He thought he was doing the great thing to kill off those people who said they were Jewish. They may or may not have been Jews, but yet they died anyway in that situation. So we'll stop there with 3, and we'll pick it up because, you know, it goes on through 9 with man's day. And of course, quite a lot of this is, or most of it is really pertinent in a literal sense. Year that, you know, you can go somewhere else and read about it too. So we'll stop here and call it a day and say we're thankful that you have come and spent your time with us. And whether you agree or whether you disagree, this is kind of the way that I see it in a sense, and the way it was kind of laid on my heart to bring it. So that's the only way I can do it.
Amen.
And, you know, if you disagree with it, that's okay. You don't have to agree. But I try to get it in a form that it can more readily be understood by those that may tune in later and listen to it. Because, you know, I realize the people that I'm sitting here talking to now quite often have, I think, a greater form of knowledge of a lot of this stuff than maybe somebody that comes along later. They may not have the depth of understanding as the way that the body of Christ does. And so, and I try to fit both in the understanding that maybe it'll make sense to those that decide to take their time and listen to it maybe later on down the road. So thank you if you're going to do that, and thank you that was here tonight. And thank you for being in my house, around the table at my construction site. So, may God bless you and, continue to pray for me that, we'll get done what we need to get done here. And, I did take, Friday night off, about the first time in 6 or 7 years that I went to a high school football game. And, our local team pretty good this year, and it was so good I got sorry for the other team they was playing against, and I left at halftime. And I wanted to see what they had, and the boys that they put out there first showed they had pretty much what it took. And so I'll wait till next year to go see the guys that played the second half this year, because they're going to get experience if they keep playing the way they played. So it was great to see. They've been down for so many years. It was great to see them for a change, to be something different from what I can remember them being. So, thank you again for putting up with me and my follies, and we're going to start next Thursday. I'm going to start into a deal with hospice for some of the lingering little bits that I have with me that I need to get ironed out. Maybe somebody there can have a little more words of encouragement that'll help me get back kind of into the gist of things, because I still seem to have that hurry up to get home feeling that I don't really need to have. But it's been there so long.
This is hard
and it's just hard to get rid of. And it really is. And, but I'm trying my best to do it. So thank you again. God bless you. Love y'all. Every one of you. Love you greatly. And more than you know. And I'll turn it over to my man of the hour, Brother Ronnie.